so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah.
All right, we're back for another one. It's the toy department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. How are you today, sir?
Pretty good. I feel good. I saw Captain America last night.
Oh, you did?
At the drive-in movie.
I was actually kind of wondering if you had seen Captain America. And what was your verdict?
I quite liked it. I mean, I wouldn't say it was perfect, but I enjoyed myself. There were some really cool things that happened, and I think they set up some things well for the future.
All right. A future I probably won't be a part of.
Well, yeah, I guess not. That I tried to talk you out of your superhero fatigue, but it went nowhere.
Yeah, I just I'm just on a visceral level, like, no, I'm just
Yeah, no, I know.
Yeah, I don't know. We won't get into that, but I do want to talk about another superhero who we have discussed in the past.
That's a great transition.
Thank you. I mean, Steph Curry walks into that game, and, you know, I was watching the game with a friend of mine who's also a Warriors fan, and I said at the beginning of the game, I'm like, this game has the potential to be Steph's flu game, right? Like, there's always that little bit lurking. And I don't know if it quite had the drama of, like, a Willis Reed, you know, limping back and, you know, or maybe that game the other night. But the way that he caught fire, I just – you see it coming, right? There was a play in the second half where he hit a three-pointer that, like, didn't count. It was one of those, like, somebody got fouled and I'm 40 feet from the basket, so I'm going to shoot it kind of threes. Right. And it went down, and you're like, uh-oh. And it took two or three more shots before it happened, but it happened, and oh my God. Is there anything better in sports than watching Steph Curry do that?
I don't think there is, first of all, right now anyway. I don't think there's anything better, and I don't think there's anything more impressive, and I also don't think there's really anything more dominant right now in sports. Which is amazing that a, you know, 6'3" point guard is the most dominant athlete in sports right now.
Yeah.
I mean, just that alone is pretty wild. And then you throw in, he's probably the most lovable superstar there's ever been. Is that crazy?
Yeah, it's really, I mean, look, there's going to be a backlash, and we've seen, like, little perks of it at various points.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I mean, there's always going to be a backlash.
Because people just get sick of winning, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, but you're right, it's really hard to find something not to like about the guy, you know?
Right, because, I mean, even when he has his boasty moments, which he did in that game, it's like, how do you blame a guy who's been out basically 3 weeks with a knee injury, you know, many, many people, including my idiot self, suggested it was not good to bring him back in that Monday night game. And he comes out and, you know, he looks rusty at first, but by the end of the game is just devouring competition at the level we've come to expect and enjoy. If you're not going to scream and yell then, I mean, you're probably not actually human at all. So mm-hmm. I can't say enough good things about him. You know, he had his MVP speech, went completely off the cuff with it when they gave it to him. And you know, that's probably something to get into, too. The first unanimous MVP in basketball history, which, you know, I think is partially a product of the times, but it's also a product of the fact that his year was undeniable.
And a product of the voters season, a little bit, that it hadn't happened before, right? That somebody,
well, yeah, that's
Michael
what I
Jordan
mean.
Didn't win one somewhere along the way. It seems a little crazy.
It is crazy. It's crazy that LeBron and Shaq didn't get him as well. I think that's what I meant by a product of the times, though, is I think the transparency has scared those trolls away from making ridiculous votes.
Yeah, I agree.
Because to not vote for Shaquille O'Neal in like 2000 or whatever that incredibly dominant year was, you just had to be a troll. You know, to not vote LeBron in, was it 08, 09 when he really went completely berserk? You're a troll. You're just being a contrarian for contrarian's sake.
Well, because to go back to your, you know, the point about how likable Steph is,
yeah,
you know, those guys you mentioned, I think, did inspire some trolls in a way that I don't think Steph does, which is, you know, not to say that this season, I mean, look, this season was, I think, the equal of some of those seasons. Just, in, I mean, the guy broke the 3-point record by 100.
His
yeah.
own 3-point record.
Yeah, also that, you know, led the league in points and steals. By the way, outside the top 30 in minutes played, and still led yep. the league in scoring, which, you know, is amazing. 73, win, all of it. Like, that's the thing about it, is it felt right because it was inarguable. And it's just so rare to see. I mean, we do see greatness and skill and things like that in sports all the time, but it's rare that it's so apparent and so inarguable.
Yeah, like this was like pure uncut greatness at mm-hmm. a level you really, really don't often see.
Yeah, and like all of those like gifs of Paul Allen.
You
see on the internet.
I noticed that live. Did you catch that? Were you watching live? As I was watching, as soon as that came up, I was like, oh, poor Paul Allen. Yeah.
But it just sums it up, right? There's like a...
Well, yeah,
disbelief.
What other expression could he possibly have at that point?
Yeah, like, oh, my God, that just happened. And also, you know, admiration. And, you know, if you have a rooted interest in the other side, just, you know, terror. It was all mixed in there, and it was just so perfect. Yeah, real quick,
I need to read you a text that I got from my little sister after that game, because I've shared it in every friggin' medium there is already, but also it's just incredible, and I think it sums it up pretty well, what we saw on Monday night specifically. She texts me at like 11:15, 11:20 p.m. Pacific time. She's in Chicago, so it's after 1 in the morning. She says, so I couldn't sleep and turned on starting the second half. I laughed literally out loud alone through the first 3 minutes of OT and cried through the remainder. No joke. Steph Curry is a f***ing god.
Yep.
Like, that's what happened on Monday, is people who... My sister is not a big NBA fan. Like, she knows a couple things. She was the best basketball athlete in my family, but she doesn't watch all the NBA playoffs. She, like, was flipping channels, bumped into it, stayed with it, and literally was crying by the end of it.
Yeah, it's amazing. I want to back it up real quick just for a couple of sort of larger NBA playoff things.
Yeah.
It seems like this playoffs, you know, there have been some crappy games for sure and some good ones. But
there have even been some crappy good ones where, like, it's crap all night long but still close and exciting down the stretch.
But I feel like we've seen these little windows or moments where things change, right? There was the moment where Steph goes down and all of a sudden looks like, oh, well, the Clippers may have their window into – you know, finally getting to a conference finals and maybe they'll, you know what I mean? There was that window and then that shut real quickly.
Yep.
You know, there was a Spurs look dominant window. That's over. Was that game the end of the, look out for Cleveland. They're hitting threes and they can beat anybody window.
As in the Warriors were just so good.
Steph is back and he is Steph and it's back to you. This is the Warriors title to lose.
I mean, if that's where you were in the first place, that's probably where you should be now. I wouldn't go quite that strong with it. I do think Cleveland is a threat. I think, you know, lucky for the Warriors, even in their current state, San Antonio is a little more of a threat than Oklahoma City in my eyes. So I think this works out for the Warriors if the Thunder do finish this thing off.
Are you stunned that the Spurs are have lost three games in this series?
I'm not yes, I am stunned, but I am most stunned by what happened down the stretch of that game last night, because if you were watching that game, and I didn't get to watch the whole thing closely, yeah, but I had my eye on it the whole time. And if you were just kind of following it, that was a game the Spurs win. I mean, that was a – it was played close the whole time. It was in San Antonio, and they had chances down the stretch. And, you know, all credit to Kevin Durant, really, because he was that dude. And, you know, Russell Westbrook made some plays down the stretch as well, but I don't recall ever really seeing the Spurs not make plays down the stretch like that. They gave up so many offensive rebounds, which is weird to see, and they just didn't get what they needed offensively, really, either.
Well, how many games did they lose at home during the entire regular season?
Yeah, I mean, one or two, maybe?
Right, and they've lost two in this series?
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember, you know, the Spurs went up 2-1. Bill Simmons was tweeting, you know, like, OKC's got to win 4 out of 5 against the Spurs, and I just don't see it happening. And, you know, then they rip off 2 straight, and all of a sudden now it looks very possible. So, or maybe it's 3 out of 4, excuse me, against the Spurs.
I mean, well, it was right.
By the math, yeah,
it
sorry.
It was 2-1 Spurs. Yeah, so whatever it is, the point is they – you just don't think of that as possible. And, you know, I'm not going to be the dude who, you know, prejudges the end of the Spurs again, because God knows what happens in the offseason. And, you know, I'm not putting anything past that group. This feels like it never has before in terms of them being on the downhill.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to mention, was the Livingston ejection, which I thought was just unconscionable. I think it's now something that kind of gets lost in the script of that game, and it's not something I hear, you know, discussed anymore.
But I brought it up yesterday on the radio, if it's any consolation.
Officiating has been a running theme now of these playoffs, you know, and whether or not it's out of control. And I sort of wonder... It's like we're never going to hear from Scott Foster on that call, right? Has there been any statement? Is there ever expected to be any statement about what the hell happened there?
Yeah, I don't think so. You know, it's weird. I feel like baseball umpires sometimes have to answer those questions.
Yeah.
Football certainly never do.
Is more accountability the answer?
What's that?
Is more accountability the answer here, do you think?
I don't know. I feel like the NBA thought that's what they were doing with the last 2-minute report, you know, and obviously they have a report on the full game. So somewhere someone reported on Scott Foster's ridiculous ejection of Sean. By the way, Sean Livingston in 11 years, has never been ejected before. And B has, even when he got ejected, he's never really been mad for longer than 5 seconds in a row.
Yeah, I know.
So like, it's so dumb. And here's the thing, you know, people have made the point to me, well, you know, then he probably let Draymond off easy, because he could have been tossed several times in that game. And I guess maybe that's true, and I think most refs feel this way most of the time. The referee's goal should be to be noticed as little as possible.
Yeah. Hasn't been Scott Foster's history, by the way.
He's awful. I mean, he's just terrible at his job, you know? And I think, I don't know if that's what happened there, that he realized he had totally blown it, and so he was extra sensitive when Sean Livingston called him out. But he missed a blatant head smack on a layup / dunk attempt. And, I mean, you know, you should be trying so hard not to affect the game in that way. And as it turned out, it may have benefited the Warriors, because I think a few extra minutes got Steph extra time to find his groove, and we all know how that worked out. But just to do something in a situation like that affects the game in such a huge way, given the Steph situation, given that Livingston is the point guard.
Yeah. And at the time, it really looked like the Blazers were about to deliver a knockout blow.
It looked like they might, yeah. So it's awful on a lot of levels. But, you know, putting all that stuff aside, I think in a regular season game where Steph is perfectly healthy, that's a bad ejection.
Yeah. All right, I got one more NBA thing I wanted to ask you about, and really it kind of extends out to all sports because we're now getting to that point, of the year where most teams are done, and so there's a lot of off-season speculation that's already happening. We talk about free agency and this player and where they might go, and I keep hearing Los Angeles and the Lakers and even sometimes the Knicks brought up as a destination. And I just want to, like, can we stop this notion that, you know, which I think is a 1980s notion, maybe a 90s notion, like that people want to play in New York and LA because they're the big media markets. And like, isn't that outdated at this point? Like, who was the last big free agent to go to the Lakers? It was Dwight, right? And that was like 5 years ago.
And that worked out great.
Yeah, and it was awesome. Like, yeah. So it's not really a thing that happens anymore. All players understand that they can be marketing superstars from outside of those markets. Kevin Durant's success in Oklahoma City, I think it's a great example of that.
Agreed. But you know what? It depends on the player. I think that's the difference now. Like, here's the thing is if you randomly say, you know, let's just say you ask the people, whoever the people are that are being polled in political polls, not a one of which have I ever met. But if you just ask them, you know, would you like to live in New York or LA? You probably get a healthy response of hell yeah. Like, people, human beings, many of them in this country, are attracted to the glitz and glamour of the big cities. That makes sense. However, people like Kevin Durant, who's, again, as you say, the perfect example, doesn't seem to much care for the spotlight and attention. Obviously he wants media attention for basketball, but the constant off-court scrutiny, he doesn't seem interested in that. He seems to prefer the homespun lifestyle in Oklahoma City, and he doesn't have to worry about his brand just because he's not in LA. Right. So you're absolutely
right.
It's
an outdated notion. The world is flat now. You could be That's a superstar right. anywhere. And on top of that, like, what these guys really want to do is either win or right. get paid. Like, those, right. you know, and hopefully both. And if you can't offer that, yeah.
That's not a factor. In baseball, it's a different story. The New York and LA teams make the most money. They spend the most money. And so, again,
yeah, but less and less true, actually, right? I mean, you know, the Yankees have practiced some austerity lately. The Mets are still digging out from Bernie. You know, you see a guy like Zach Greinke sign in Arizona rather than LA.
Well, but that's the, you know, the Dodgers are still spending a stupid amount of money. But
Dodgers
again,
have a big payroll, but it's not automatic that you're going to go there. You know what I mean?
And again, more to your point at the beginning, you don't have to. There's no sports or sports marketing reasons why you specifically have to be in New York or LA. It's just a question of whether you're someone like Carmelo or, I think, you know, Blake Griffin, who cherishes the spotlight and wants to be in the big city.
Yeah, see, but I've heard Blake Griffin like to go back to Oklahoma City.
Well, that may be true. I'm just saying, like, he's a guy who's used the spotlight.
I guess mostly
positively.
I just think that, like, it's such an outdated notion, and yet it continues to be proffered without any actual evidence. And, like, Carmelo is completely the exception.
I think it's mostly proffered, for what it's worth, by fans of those cities' teams, and also by idiot media people who are either trolling or just not creative or intelligent enough to come up with a better storyline. You know, I don't think people who pay attention think that anymore.
I hope so. And besides, you know, 80% of the league lives in L.A. or Atlanta. In the off season,
or Florida,
right? And by the way, no one ever says, like, oh, well, you know, it's Atlanta, it's Black Hollywood. Of course, they would want to play there, like, because that's not how it works, right?
Or DC. No one ever says that about DC. Yeah, you know, like, it's it's silly and it is outdated. And I think nothing says that more than the Lakers and Knicks experiences over the last 5 years or so.
Yep. I would agree with that. Do you buy into the idea of the Lakers trading the pick this year for like a veteran star?
I buy into the idea that they want to do it. I think it's silly, and I don't know that it will work.
Yeah, I'll be interested.
Like, I don't know why, unless it's like a 27-year-old veteran, you know, like otherwise you're like putting yourself back in the Kobe situation. You just got rid of the veteran that was getting in the way and gumming up the works for your young guys.
Yeah.
Why would you want another one?
I still don't understand how Laker fans can't hold it against Kobe like that. Just his general presence submarining the team for like a full 3-4 years.
The Kobe mania among Laker fans is wild.
It's really weird.
It's more dramatic than any other fan group disgruntled superstar thing I've ever seen.
So it's so far beyond rational. Should we jump out of the world of sports? There's a Radiohead record that came out this week, and I feel like that needs to be
addressed. Yeah, there is.
A Moon-Shaped Pool released digitally on Sunday. And
did you throw away lots of your money at a box set version of it that before you'd even heard the album?
I did not. I have moved past physical music, I feel like. I have no desire.
I still like records.
To tactilely have music anymore. It just is harder to move when I need to move in my, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I hear you, but I still enjoy records. You know, I don't buy everything on record, but
I
enjoy having things I really like and things that are like important to me on record.
Yeah. In fact, now while I have this record obviously in, you know, digital files, the fact that I can't get it on Spotify yet is massively annoying to me. It's a major annoyance, and I understand.
Yeah, we have a very different approach.
Tom's issue with Spotify, but I'm like most people use the internet, convenience first.
You know about the Apple Music issue?
I don't. What's the Apple Music issue? Is it that Apple Music is not that good?
It's much worse than that. Okay. Apparently, the way Apple Music works is it took some people's music from their computers that, you know, people had, let's say, a live version of some Van Halen song.
Okay.
And Apple Music was like,
as we do.
Yeah. And Apple Music was like, oh, you've got this Van Halen song. Cool. Well, you don't need to hold on to that anymore because I've got it for you here in the cloud. And then it would be the album version of that song in the cloud. And it would and the person's live version was gone.
Ooh.
So that is exactly why I don't mess with any of these things, because that is my desperate fear that I will somehow, via my relationship with one of these music streaming services, lose the precious actual files that I have on my computer.
Spotify doesn't mess with your files. You're safe.
I'm sure Apple Music would have said the same thing a month ago. So
but there's a different. There's a whole like I'm syncing to your iTunes library process that has to happen there.
I know that. I'm just saying, even if it's an irrational fear, that is the specific fear that has kept me from jumping in full force.
Apple Music is your Kobe, is what you're saying?
Yeah, kind of. But here's my question to you, like. What you just said about the Radiohead album, and let's get back to the album soon, but if it's in Spotify, don't you have it? Can't you put it in Spotify as files?
No, that's not how it works.
Yeah, see, that would drive me up a wall.
Right? Yeah, like, so that's how you start mixing your chocolate with your peanut butter, and then, you know, right?
Well, those things are good, though.
They are. I could go for some chocolate and peanut butter right now. Also good, by the way. This new Radiohead album.
I think it's really good. I think it's really, really good. And I think I can sum up my elevator pitch for it. I think I can sum up very easily. Is that, and I actually crystallized this in a conversation with my buddy on our way to the drive-in movie last night. It sounds like Radiohead, undeniably, when you hear it. And yet, and it even has many of the elements that we've heard from them before. And yet they continue to experiment. They continue to combine those elements in different and interesting ways. And they continue to write beautiful, beautiful new songs. And it's just so awesome. I'm thrilled with this album.
Yeah, yeah, me too. For me, I guess my elevator pitch is this is the Johnny Greenwood record to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, Johnny Greenwood's a goddamn genius. So,
he is. He really is. It's so eclectic and interesting and beautiful. It's beautiful.
Yeah. You know, I think probably a greater reliance, you know, on orchestration and strings on this record than any of the ones they've done in the past. Not that that hasn't been there, kind of like you said. It's just maybe this time more to the forefront than in previous records. And it's just, it's beautiful. And it's one of those records that you just know, like, hasn't told you everything yet. You know what I mean? That, like, I appreciate this record now and I really like it, but 10 listens from now, I'm going to appreciate it in another deeper way. And I'm really psyched to get there, you know?
No question. So. This is, in terms of repeated immediate playback, this album is out striping almost anything I've picked up in the last couple of years almost. I mean, this probably the only other record, I think the other two records that pop to mind in terms of like it came out and I've been playing it over and over again like this are To Pimp a Butterfly and the D'Angelo record that came out a couple of years ago. In other words, big, important, amazing records in my eyes. And this one is getting that sort of attention from me.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I mean, it's interesting. A lot of talk about, you know, True Love Waits making this record. It's so good. I'm sorry. Like,
again,
the best
it's
possible
beautiful
version. You know, but that's a song that they wrote during the Benz sessions. And
yeah,
been playing
and
live
it's,
for
and
20
it's been
years.
Played.
Yeah. Burn the Witch is another song that's, you know, they've been working on for decades. But I just, it's so rare to see a band, you know, this far into their career making music that is exciting on the level of, you know, a young buck like Kendrick Lamar, kind of, you know, who's coming into the, you know, the peak of his powers. Like, these guys are still doing it and you're still excited to see what they have to say next. And they have been a band since, you know, Pablo Honey came out in 92.
Somewhere around there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think bringing up Burn the Witch is a great example because to talk about the sort of orchestral stuff you're talking about, it's almost like here's this song that has been in the hopper for them for however many years, but it wasn't ready to be put out until they reached this point where they could play it this way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And everything about Radiohead throughout their career, even the parts, you know, I may not or anyone may not like as much, it all seems so organic and based on like this really positive and at the risk of sounding raucous, like correct sentiment of experimentation and expansion and improvement. And it's so awesome, like you said, to see a band at this point still committed to pushing forward and making new interesting things. It's just so awesome and rare.
Yeah, I look, you know, the two first loves, the two musical first loves of my life were, you know, Radiohead and Pearl Jam, who actually came out around the same time. And
look, those are really solid first loves. I'm kind of impressed right now.
Thank you.
Because my first love was probably like Technotronic. I mean, very young.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
Saying.
I'm talking about serious loves. Like I have some decent. Like I like U2 and NXS a lot when I was like fairly little, and I don't. Mm-hmm. I'm not embarrassed by those, but there are definitely some pop things I also liked a lot that are crazy. And my first record was Living Color. That was definitely my first favorite band. I'm still proud of it, but hasn't aged maybe quite as well as those other two. But you know, and look, like modern day Pearl Jam, like there's a lot to admire about that band currently. Like they are still a world class live act.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And you know, they still do make some decent songs. You know, like you hear the last record, it's not bad. There's some interesting stuff on here. I can listen to this.
Yeah, but it's not pushing. It's not pushing the way Radiohead does.
Yeah, like in the way that you can't wait to hear a new Radiohead record, and you feel like it's Stand With A, and then it comes out now. It's not that same kind of thing, and it's just such a credit to them. And I do think a rarity, you know, in this world. And there are artists who are, you know, who are great and may have made great, great records that just 20 years in your career, you're not anticipating their next move, you know, and that's a natural thing. So Radiohead had defied that in a way. I think it's really awesome.
Yeah. And you know, beyond that, it's just from a selfish perspective. And again, I'm sure I'm going to sound like a pretentious ass when I say this, and maybe I am, but in general, there's not a lot of exciting rock music for me right now. And there are indie groups I really like that are doing interesting things. Don't get me wrong. But like our biggest bands, there's even less of this than I think there was 15, 20 years ago, where I kind of know what things are going to sound like most of the time in the rock world. Yep. Is that crazy?
No, it's not crazy. Do you have a plan to see Radiohead this summer?
I don't know. I can't go to LA. They're playing LA in the middle of the friggin' week, and I can't afford to take days off for that.
They're playing your town.
What's that?
They are playing your town.
They're playing Outside Lands, which is sold out, and I just don't know that I'm going to be able to afford that ticket.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
I'm going to look at, you know, I'm keeping an eye on it. I would go to Outside Lands, which I am generally uninterested in, just to see Radiohead, undoubtedly.
And it will be worth it. Although, I mean, if you are going to Outside Lands, and, you know, I don't know if
no,
you
I mean, I would go. It's not like I would show up late. I'm just saying I would only buy, I wouldn't buy the ticket for anything else that's there. I would buy the ticket just because Radiohead is there. We'll just see what happens.
Yeah. And see LCD too, if you haven't seen them live. That's
I would love to see them live, but that's kind of my point. Like, if they're not on the same day as Radiohead, I would not buy that ticket.
And they won't be. Yeah, fair enough. all right.
It's nothing against LCD. I like them very much. It's cool that they're back. I would enjoy that, but I'm not going to pay $150 for it.
Yeah. Should we check in on the Game of Thrones?
I guess so, right? That seems like the thing to do.
Yeah.
I don't think we talked about it last week, which is funny because we talked about it after the first week, which was I think we were both a little meh on that episode.
Yeah. They definitely turned up the you know, we talked about the first episode was a lot of setup. And
yes.
They've gotten out of that mode. Like things are happening.
Yeah, man. Sure. And you know, I thought perhaps not ironically, because we probably should have expected it. The second episode answered a lot of the questions I asked in an annoyed tone about the first episode.
Yeah.
And it did happen quickly, which was cool. You know, I thought they might stretch out that sort of first bunch of action till mid season. But not only did they not do that, I mean, so much happened in episode two, and spoiler alert, because there's no way to talk about this without spoiling it.
If you're not caught up, just fast forward 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You got no chance.
I write down when we start talking about things in the description.
Oh,
so you can see literally the time signature of when this conversation stops.
Okay.
But to suddenly have not only sort of the stuff you expect in terms of murder and rebirth with Jon Snow coming back, but Ramsay murdering Roose Bolton totally caught me by surprise.
Yeah, did not see that one coming.
That was awesome and exciting. And I thought, you know, I really, for whatever reason, it really stuck in my craw that they seemed to be extra slow playing Arya. And that changed gears pretty suddenly as well, to where I almost went back the other way, like, whoa, that almost happened.
You're like, whoa, they fast played her. Hey, I'm just curious about Ramsay. Like, where do you stand on Ramsay Bolton? Like, it sounds like you're pretty pro.
No, I mean, I'm not pro.
Like, as a character, I'm not saying, like, you're, like, rooting for the guy. But
no,
like,
I mean, he flays people, and he likes to stab everyone and cut off penises. Like I'm not a huge fan, but
he's
exciting.
You got a sense, right? Didn't you get the sense that after he killed Roose Bolton, that, like, there was a little glimmer in his eye, like, knowing that he was going to kill the woman and the baby right after? It's like, yeah, now here comes the baby murder.
I'll say this. That actor is tremendous.
Yeah, he is
good. I believe it all. I believe all of the hideous, like, violence that he perpetrates, and I believe that he enjoys it. I mean, I think that guy kills it, as most of the actors and actresses do. But I think he was awesome, and
he
brings a level of chaos that is thrilling.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. And you do like you know, I feel confident in saying that I don't think Ramsay's going to win the Game of Thrones. At some point, he's going to get his, and it's going to be deeply, deeply satisfying.
But I was listening to, I think it was Bill Simmons who said it on a podcast I was listening to, or he asked the question, who's winning right now? Who's winning the Game of Thrones right now? And I think it is Ramsay.
Do you?
I mean, right now?
I guess
it might be one of those situations in your NCAA pool when you're like, you're winning, but like, when you look at the total potential points, you're like, oh, I'm definitely not going to win this thing in the end. Like, it might be that, but I think, you know, he's ahead on the scoreboard right now, isn't he?
I guess so, but here's the thing, and maybe, look, maybe I'm wrong about this, and that might change it. So if I am, correct me, but he is unaware of the White Walkers, no?
You know, it may have been mentioned to him, but it certainly doesn't seem to be forefront of his mind.
And he's hanging around the north and making, you know, planning to make moves against the Night's Watch and whatever.
Yeah, okay, but who else would be winning?
Completely
the Game
unaware.
Of Thrones?
Like, I feel like he's got a one seed in his path and he doesn't even know it. You know what I mean? So
that might be true. That might be true. He's like an overconfident four seed right now. Right,
exactly. Exactly.
Like, but who else would it be? I mean, I guess it could be Tyrion.
Yeah, I mean, it could be Tyrion.
It can't be Daenerys because she's got her problems. She's stuck with the Dothraki widows.
Yeah, I guess it's not Tyrion.
It can't really be anyone in King's Landing.
Right, or the Iron Islands.
Right, because stuff's just... I mean, look, Cersei's on the comeback trail. There's no doubt about that. Like, she looked like she was in trouble for a while, and now she looks like...
She's moving up in the polls.
Exactly. She's creeping on the come up, but she's still, I mean, her only real power at this moment is like a giant zombie.
Is the answer Littlefinger?
Now, that's a great question, but we haven't actually seen him.
That's true.
He does seem to be the character that has the most control.
Right. And he
that has his finger in the most pies.
Yeah. His little finger.
That's disturbing on multiple levels. But,
so many levels.
But I don't know where he is. I don't remember like where he's like in between zones again. But he does seem to. He seems to have the most. He's the closest to like a omniscient narrator in the whole situation. Like he seems to have a decent idea of what's happening in all variety of places. And seems to have some small measure of influence in a lot of different spots.
Is it wrong that I continue to root for the murder of all Stark children not named Sansa and Arya?
No. But
like,
I do hope something happens with Bran to change your mind.
I do too, but I remain unconvinced. I mean, I was literally rooting for Ramsay to like do what you will with this Stark child. Like,
well, have you seen the tweets?
Stick him off the board.
Have you seen the tweets that are like it's time for Reek 2?
I have not, but
like that's a terrifying idea and also kind of exciting. Rickon does not seem like he's going to be in good shape in the very near future because I think Ramsay is not thrilled with the way his experience with the last Stark child ended. And I feel like he might take that out on Rickon. Yeah. Bran. I mean, that seems to be a whole storyline, right? And it's boring right now and nothing is happening with it. And there's like weird flashbacks.
You say
that,
boring right now, like there was a point where it was not boring.
No, I say that with the hope that that changes in the future because the flashbacks are kind of interesting and not totally boring, but it's not really apparent how it has anything to do with anything. I think the hope is we find that out soon because they, I think we go inside that tower in the next episode would be my thought. But you're right. I mean, right now he's sitting in a cave like doing the Ghost of Christmas's Past, and it's unclear A, how this helps anybody, and B, how he's ever going to get back to the places where he can be involved in this stuff.
Yeah, I, you know, it, exactly. It's all like, I mean, I'm sure that there's some plan to string him back into the story, but I'm hoping maybe he just gets, well, no, he can't. Like, I was going to say, I'm hoping that maybe he meets some death we don't anticipate.
Yeah, but then that's just like a weird thing.
But then we wasted
Hank
all that time.
Trail.
And we know that's not going to happen. It's essentially the Jon Snow theory. So,
Wait, what about the Jon Snow theory?
It's like everyone knew Jon Snow was going to come back because,
yeah, he had to.
There's just too much story that depended on.
It does seem like the end game of this whole thing is some sort of great, like, grand Stark child reunion.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they're, I mean, that, you know, we're going to get that, I would figure sometime at some point in the last season. But, you know, this is, you know, the great thing about this show is, right, is it's a story that has been willing to throw us massive curveballs. So I'm going to try to, like, you know what I mean? Like not think that, well, we definitely know this, because that's usually when they sort of guess. So.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the beauty of it though, is that they draw us into like, well, clearly this is going to happen. And then all of a sudden Ramsay's stabbing someone in the stomach out of nowhere.
Yep.
So they continue, much like Radiohead, they continue to succeed in a lot of those spots where you think, you know, and it turns out you just don't know.
Yep, you just don't know. You better call somebody. all right. I wanted to bring up, and maybe this is homework. I don't know.
Okay.
But I wanted to bring up another show on HBO on Sunday nights. Have you been watching Silicon Valley this season?
Oh, yeah.
Because I think it's been tremendous. And I've always enjoyed the show.
Yes, me too.
But I think this season's plot line, bringing in a CEO for Pied Piper that's kind of a foil.
And by the way, do you know that actor's name?
Yes. Are you asking me or did
yes,
you?
Yes, I'm asking.
Yes, his name is Stephen Tobolowsky.
He is awesome.
He is definitely an all-time that guy.
Yes.
I happen to pull up his IMDb page in anticipation.
And he's a particular type of that guy, yeah. But he's great at what he does.
His IMDb page as an actor has 245 credits.
Yep.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, and all sorts of things that you have seen or would likely see. He was in we talked about Californication, I think, at some point, right?
Yep, he was Stu with the giant dick in Californication.
Right, with the giant dick. Yeah. He was in Memento, he was in Groundhog Day, he was in Thelma and Louise.
He's Ned Ryerson.
Yes, he's Ned Ryerson in Groundhog Day. And then, like, you know, you look at these TV shows, you know, stints on Justified. He was in Fuller House, for God's sakes.
What?
Yeah, I haven't seen Fuller House, but he was in that.
We may have that. We may have to watch and discuss Fuller House at some point.
Yep. Mindy not. Project, The Goldbergs. Yeah, we're probably not going to watch Fuller House. Glee. What I mean? Like, he just shows up and stuff. Heroes. I forgot he was in Heroes.
That's right.
Yeah. And of course, he was the mayor of Beverly Hills in Entourage.
Of course.
Just one of those dudes, and always enjoyable whenever he's in it. And I honestly, I feel like this has maybe been one of his best showcases, because he gets to play this guy who comes off as really charming and friendly, and then has this like layer
and almost
underneath.
Like kind of crunchy.
Yeah.
And he's not at all. He's a vicious CEO.
Yeah, vicious. I think maybe vicious is the right word. And he's killing it. And such a perfect foil for these guys who are kind of scheming, but also bumbling.
Yes.
I've really enjoyed this season. It's made me laugh, but also just sort of been entertaining to watch from a story standpoint. So
I totally agree. And I think while we're talking about actors in specific, I would also like to credit TJ Miller, who he's very well cast in this role. I don't know how, I don't think it's much of a stretch for him, but he's so enjoyable. He's so funny. I love his personality as a comedian, and I think it really comes through in a weird way in a role like this. And I think he's a huge part of what makes the show really funny every week.
When he dropped that Bell Biv Dinesh, that chain is poison, I was cackling.
He's so funny, man. He's just, and like, he's so good at that fake aura of like grandeur. It's just like, it's like right in his wheelhouse, and it just, he's a laugh riot every single episode.
That season where they're like, you know, taking all those meetings and he's just in like straight out, like insulting people. Like, and they just let him go on these runs is all time classic. Now, the Shock Top commercials he does are pretty terrible, and I'm a damn waste, but
I don't remember those, but I also,
you didn't see those during like the NCAA tournament where he's like doing the staring contest with the beer cap?
Oh, I'm sure I did. I've gotten pretty good at blocking commercials out, both while they're on and after they happen.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you.
I just totally zone out. Like, it's, I just, I, yeah.
Yeah. So, watch Silicon Valley. It's great. Veep also very good. Although I've not been watching Veep.
I've never watched it while it's on. I've binged a couple of seasons, but for whatever reason, it's never completely hooked me. I think it's very funny, but it just doesn't.
Veep, I think, is almost having a problem in that the absurdity of actual politics is now surpassing the absurdity on the show.
Yeah, I mean that, which is so depressing. But I think it might just be my general distaste with politics that I've never been able to fully lock in.
I mean, if Ted Cruz was a character on Glee, like, you wouldn't believe it. You know what I mean? Right? Like,
yeah.
But he's a real guy.
The basketball circle?
The basketball ring.
Ring. My bad.
All right. So do we have anything else we need to cover? I feel like I missed a topic in my list of things.
I also feel like that, and yet I can't bring it to mind right now. Hold on. I feel like I have a list written down here. I lost my list when I was searching for my sister's text. That's a weird sentence. No, man, I think maybe we got it.
All right, well, let's wrap it up then.
Yeah, why not? That was a good, tight episode of the Toy Department.
It was tight. Tight.
Okay, now I feel weird that I said that.
Sorry.
Let's make Silicon Valley homework, because I mean, I guess we're watching it anyway, and maybe there's no need to make it homework, but, if anyone has not watched it, do that. And then you email us at toydepartmentpod@gmail.com and tell us what you thought.
I agree. And listen to the Radiohead too.
The Radiohead album. Like, I almost feel like we don't have to assign that. I feel like anyone
who's listening to this podcast has figured out they should listen to the Radiohead album by now.
Well, that, and also, like, no one missed this. No one was, like, sleeping on this Radiohead album.
All right, fair point.
It landed with a pretty loud
thud.
I don't know what the right word is. I don't want to say thud. It exploded. It exploded onto the scene with much gusto.
Pretty impressive for a record that dropped at like 2 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon.
They're unbelievable. Yeah. And that's another thing about them that we didn't get into at all, that a band who has done such interesting things experimenting with technology musically has really just murdered the game from a sales and reach perspective on the technology front.
Yep. I mean, I think that they, you know, came from the old music paradigm. You know, they were still a part of the monoculture, and then figured out how to leverage that in the internet culture in a way that few have.
Yeah. So. And they may, I don't know if this is what you were trying to say, but the fact that they reached prominence in the monoculture allowed them to do some of what they'd done, just because their popularity, you know, they didn't need some of the things that smaller acts need in the internet age. But, you know, that doesn't really take away from how creative, again, it's creativity and cleverness, and it's thinking about pushing forward, pushing the medium forward, pushing the process, the sales process forward. And that's, you know, it's not a coincidence. They arrive at these places for the same reasons, and it's because they're smart and creative and they're thinking.
Yep. Thinking is good. That, maybe we should make that homework. Think. Just think this week.
Think about what you're trying to do. Oh, sorry.
All right. And on that note, let's get out of here.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.